Okay, I'm here with Lynn Lott and Jane Nelson. Lynn is in town and they're working on some books, but today we're going to talk about the teenager book, Positive Discipline for Teenagers. So why don't you guys tell me a little bit about how you guys got started working together and working on the teenagers?
Okay, this is Jane Nelson, and after having written Positive Discipline, I'm just thinking it was working so well until one of my kids became a teenager and started to rebel. And I went crazy, and I started throwing the book out and going back to punishment and lecturing and giving. I was just going crazy. And I went to a workshop that Lynn was doing at a NASAP convention. That's the North American Society of Adlerian Psychology. And she was doing this workshop on teenagers, and I attended it, and I just was so impressed. I thought, she can help me. She can solve all my problems. And so I went up to her, and I said, Lynn, we've got to write a book together. And you said, Lynn?
And I said, no, I'm not really interested in writing a book. I have enough to do. I don't have time to write a book. I'm in a new relationship, and I absolutely don't want to add one more thing to my plate, to which Jane did.
I said, but you have to. You have to. We have to do this together, because I know that if I can help my child, then we can write about this, and it will help a lot of other people, and so you have to.
And as much as I want to help people, I absolutely refused. So Jane and my then new husband, Hal, went out for lunch, and at lunch,
we conspired about how to convince her how to do this.
And obviously, they convinced me.
Now, did you guys write the book first, or did you start doing some workshops together?
Oh, this was 19 years ago, and Jane and I had never written a book together at that time. And I thought Jane knew how to write books. I thought she had kind of a plan, a method. And so I just took Jane's lead. And basically what we did is we drove back and forth to Tahoe in her car, and she had a tape recorder, and she would ask me questions about teens, and I'd answer them. And then she'd go home and transcribe all the answers. And then we'd get together again until we had hundreds of hours of transcriptions about teenagers. Then do you remember what happened next?
Well, yes. But first I want to say, meanwhile, I was trying all of these suggestions, because the way we both like to write books is we don't like to put anything in there unless it really works, either for us personally or for the people we work with. So, because we were transcribing for at least a year, and we were also doing workshops.
Oh, that's right.
We wanted to do workshops so we could work with people and find out what was really needed. But finally, Lynn saw all this stuff, and she said, well, wait a minute, when does it get organized? When does it have an outline? When do we know what chapters? And I said, oh, it'll all fall into place. Well, that drove Lynn nuts. So what did you do?
Well, because I realized at that point Jane didn't have a plan, nor did she know what she was doing. So
Wait. It's not that I don't know what I'm doing. Look how many books I've written. It's just I have a different style of doing it.
That's true. Her style was driving me crazy. So I said to Jane, here's what we're going to do. The best thinking always happens over food. We're going to go out to eat. We're going to go out for breakfast. We went to a place in Truckee, California called the Squeeze Inn. And I said, we're going to make an outline for a book, and it can only fit on a napkin at the Squeeze Inn. So we sat down with a napkin, and we said, if we were giving a workshop, which both of us gave with ease, and we made an outline for a workshop, what would be the main points that we would have in that outline for a workshop on teenagers? And we outlined it on a napkin, and we came home, and we then had the chapters.
And then you had me print out all of the stuff that we had written up, which was pages and pages and pages. You spread them out all over the floor and got your scissors and started cutting and pasting them into those piles of chapters.
Because we didn't really know how to cut and paste very well in the computer at that point.
So I didn't want to do it that way.
So that's how our first book got started. And it was called I'm On Your Side, which I thought was a beautiful title because it was the theme of how we hoped parents could be with their teenagers. And instead of being in a war with their teens, they could be on the same side.
I'd also like to tell another story about that. It's like one of the big concepts of all our books is to make sure the message of love gets through. And we had been teaching this in our workshops, and one father said that he was in a fight with his son. They were just really going at it. And all of a sudden he remembered to make sure the message of love gets through, and he just stopped and he said, son, do you know that I'm on your side? And the son just got teary and said, how would I know that? And so I thought, okay, that's a great title for a book. But the interesting thing is that it didn't sell. In, I think, a year, it had only sold 2,000 copies or something. And so we changed it to I'm on Your Side. Oh, no.
We changed it to Positive Discipline for Teens. And in the first month, we sold as many copies as we had sold in a year with the title I'm on Your Side.
Well, let's get a little bit into the content of the book. One of the problems that we have, or a lot of people have with teenagers, is the lying. And it seems like teens are always lying to their parents. And, you know, what kind of advice would you give for parents if they have teens that are lying to them?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that all teenagers lie. One of the workshops that I did for parents of teenagers was a really fun workshop where I asked the parents of teenagers to talk to the person next to them at the workshop and tell them about something they had never told their parents. And these were people who were in their 40s and 50s, and they started sharing stories from their teenage years, things that their parents probably to this day don't know happened. And then they started sharing some of the stories with the rest of the audience. And they were all the kind of things that teens lie about, because teens have to individuate and they're experimenting and trying to learn new things. And they don't, first of all, they don't want their parents to tell them they can't do these things. But second of all, they don't want to lose face with their parents. They don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to experiment with someone looking over their shoulder. So the fact that teenagers lie is as old as there have been teenagers.
Right. That activity we called teen secrets.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that parents set their kids up. Like when you said they're looking for them to lie. Sometimes it's done just with a little simple thing. Like when kids are younger, we'll say, did you eat the cookie? When we know very well that they ate the cookie. And so instead of saying, did you do that? Say, I noticed you ate the cookie. We need to figure out a solution to this so that what works for both of us, so that you don't eat cookies just before dinner or whatever the problem is.
So with a teenager, it might be, I noticed that you said you'd mow the lawn before you went out with your friends, and the grass is still long, the lawn hasn't been mowed, and now we have to figure out how to get it mowed before anything else happens. It might be something like that. Or it might be, I noticed that you told me that you were going to be at so-and-so's house, but when I called to just check in or see what time you were going to be home, the parents said they not only had no idea you were planning to be there, but their kid was somewhere else. So, you know, these are the kind of things that happen with teenagers. You get to choose how you want to deal with them, as opposed to accusing your kids of being a liar, punishing your kids, and suddenly setting up a war between you and your kids.
A very important part of that, too, is that I don't think that most parents create an atmosphere where it's safe to tell the truth. Because how many of us would tell the truth if we knew that the result would be blame, shame, or pain? And I would like to give an example of that. It's like finally with, you know, my seven children, I think I had gotten this down to where I could do it maybe at least 80% of the time with Mary, the youngest. And I remember once when she went to a party and she came home the next day and she said, boy, one thing I've learned is that when I have kids, if they tell me that they're going to stay with a friend, I'll know they're lying. Because every kid that was there had told their parents they were going to stay with a friend instead of going to the party. And she was the only one who felt that she could tell the truth. And because we just brainstormed with her, well, what will happen if people drink? What will happen if you get drunk or whatever? Letting her know that she could call us if she had a problem. And do you remember that thing, something about, oh, can you tell that story about when you were coming down from the ski slopes with your kids and they were talking about going to a party?
Oh, right. And my daughter was in the car with me with one of her friends, and Corey and I were talking about all kinds of things that they were going to be doing during the week, and the kids said from the back seat, man, Corey, how come you're telling your mom all this stuff? You know, we can't tell our parents any of this stuff or they would dog us forever. And Corey said, well, my mom and I can talk about this stuff. I'm not going to be in trouble for any of it. You know, I wanted to read a little excerpt from our teen book, Positive Discipline for Teenagers, and this is on page 10, and it's under the subheading called Teens Have a Great Need for Privacy. Is that okay? Do we have time for that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So it's just a little paragraph. Your teen's need for privacy can be very scary for you. You may worry that you're not being a responsible parent if you don't know everything your teen is doing. You may fear that your teen might build bombs or engage in some other disastrous activity if you're not vigilant. We have news for you. If your teens are going to engage in these activities, they will do it in spite of your vigilance. They will just go underground so they have less chance of being caught. The best prevention for possible disaster is to build kind and firm relationships with your teens. Let them know that they are unconditionally important to you and provide opportunities for them to learn important life skills. They will then be able to think for themselves and figure out what is important to them. Accomplishing this goal is the aim of this book.
So can we get into a little more detail about that? Like say you have your teenager and you're worried about drinking. They're going to drink or they're using illegal drugs. And, they're telling you that they're not doing it, but then you can find evidence in their pockets and while you're doing their laundry or whatever that they are. And what would be the best way to proceed in that case?
I don't know that there's a best way to proceed, but I know that there's a worse way to proceed, which is what most parents would do, is confront their kids saying, I found this, and from now on, first of all, you're grounded. Second of all, we're taking away your cell phone. We're taking away your computer time. And you're not going to be going out with your friends again until I'm convinced that this is never going to happen again. That absolutely is not going to work.
We have one of the things we talk about, I don't know if we talk about it in the book or not, but we do a lot, is one of the bumper stickers that we just really annoy us is, do you know where your kids are? And what we have suggested changing it is, do you know your kids? And we talk a lot about how you have to build the relationship. And first of all, if there is a drug problem and you know it, you need professional help. That's just bottom line, because when kids are on drugs, you can't reason with them. They're not rational. You're talking to a drug, not a kid. But if you're building a relationship and you're teaching kids life skills, like if more parents would sit down and talk to their kids instead of to them or at them, and that they focused on brainstorming for solutions. We talk a lot about focusing on solutions. That's why it's one of our websites, is focusingonsolutions.com. And if they just did this more, where, for example, we talk a lot about mistakes are wonderful opportunities to learn. And most of us grew up with the idea, oh, if I made a mistake, I'm a bad person. I better hide it. I better blame somebody else. I better not take risks. Instead of, oh, you made a mistake. What fantastic. What can you learn from it? And if people had regular family meetings where they sat down, well, I even love the idea of a dinner table. Everybody gets to share a mistake they made and what they learned from it. And then during family meetings, you talk about, here's problems. What are some solutions? So kids are focusing on solutions. And one other thing I want to say, and that is a really, really popular discipline method today that is called logical consequences is really disguised punishment. And it doesn't work. It caused kids to go underground. That's why they lie. They're afraid of punishment. And if you would focus on solutions more, to, okay, here's a problem. What's the solution? And then help kids explore the consequences of their choices instead of imposing consequences on them. And that's where we ask curiosity questions like, what happened? What do you think caused it to happen? How do you feel about it? What are your ideas to solve this problem? That brings it from within, so that the child is learning to solve problems from their inner wisdom rather than always having to just black out and blank out when we start lecturing at them.
You know, I'm working with some kids right now in my counseling practice, and the kids are talking a lot with me about their debate whether or not they're going to start trying pot out. They're all very curious about pot, and they're thinking they want to try it, and they haven't quite made up their mind. And so it's a pretty interesting open discussion with a lot of curiosity about the whole issue with the kids. But one thing I asked them is, what would happen with your parents if they found out, you know, that you were going to use pot? And have you had this conversation with your parents? And what they said is, we could never have this conversation with our dad because he would immediately punish us for even having the idea. So he will never know about anything we're doing. But when we talk to our mom about it, our mom talked to us about, if we do decide to do it, how to be safe, how to keep the dialogue open with her, what some of the things are that might happen if we do it, what we can expect. And, you know, we feel like we can talk to our mom about everything. So, I don't know, put yourself in that family. Which person are you? Which person would you like to be? And how do you create that kind of atmosphere?
Well, I have a question about that one. It almost sounds like this: the mother is condoning it, that it's okay to do it.
No, the mother is being realistic, and the mother believes in having an open relationship with her kids. The mother believes in keeping the dialogue open because she's a parent and she wants to be around and available if, in fact, the kids make this decision. Kids decide to do a lot of things that their parents don't like them doing or don't want them to do. But when you're a teenager, your parents aren't the people who you're going to use as your consultants, whether to do something or not. Your peer group is way more important than your parents. So she wants to be involved in the process to help keep them safe.
You know, I think a lot of parents, myself included, are almost in denial about what their teenagers are doing.
I would say that you hit it right on the head.
In fact, Lynn has called that parenting with a paper bag on your head.
So what advice could you give to those kind of parents?
My advice is to pick up a copy of Positive Discipline for Teenagers and read it from cover to cover at least 10 times. You think I'm kidding. You know, you think I'm kidding. I look at the books. When I go to the bookstore, I look at the books that are out there for parents of infants. I look at the books, you know, that my kids and their friends are reading because they all have new babies. They are reading and on the web researching every day. By the time people have teenagers, they are so angry with their kids. They have taken things so personally, and they are so scared about what's going to happen that they've stopped getting knowledge and getting information about how to be with kids. Jane and I get emails and calls constantly from people who have read our book, Positive Discipline for Teenagers, saying, thank you, I feel like I have my kid back. Thank you, because I'm no longer in a war with my teenager. So I'm not just trying to sell books, I'm trying to help people with teenagers. There is information out there that makes it better, and our book is full of it.
Exactly. I was doing a teacher in service in Georgia, and this teacher said, this positive discipline in the classroom has helped me in my classroom so much. And then she started to cry, and she said, but it gave me back, the teen book gave me back my relationship with my teenager.
All right, well, that's probably a good place to end this part of the interview. Next time, I think we're going to read some of those email questions that you guys get, and we'll talk about those. All right, so thank you, Lynn. Thanks, Jane.
You're welcome. Thanks, Ken.